The True Falls Film Festival takes place this week, and KBIA has been talking with some of the filmmakers involved with this year's festival selections in a series, True False Conversations. I'm Christopher Husted. For more than a decade, Russian entrepreneur Victor Boot was widely thought of as a brilliant, elusive figure heading a global arms trade. By the time he was brought down by an elaborate sting operation in 2008, Boot's reputation in the media was that of a supervillain. But in their film, The Notorious Mr. Boot, Maxim Polsorovkin and Tony Gerber examine Boot's life in the arms trade through a slightly different lens, Boot's own. Before he became known as the Merchant of Death, Boot was to some just a businessman, a travel enthusiast, and an amateur filmmaker. KBIA's Katie Heiler spoke with the directors about using this found footage to paint a more nuanced picture of one of the world's most notorious criminals.
What made you guys decide to show your film at the True False Film Festival?
Oh, man, because True False is literally the best festival. It's the people that run it, both Paul and David, are super nice. Everyone will save us. It's not even just us, but everyone says it's the most fun festival to go to, and there's no better festival experience.
So how did you guys get together on this project?
Well, Max and I met at Victor's trial in New York City and began talking about projects we were working on and came together on our understanding of what the trial was about and who Victor represented as a character, the fact that he was this sort of significant historical character whose true story hadn't yet been told.
You guys had some really awesome access, and it was so compelling, probably because of that access. How did you get Alla, Victor Boot's wife, to get on board, and all those family members and friends who are part of the documentary, how did you get them to agree to this?
I don't think anyone in Victor's family or his business or any of his associates would have spoken to us without first checking with Victor. So, you know, really, we sort of had to pass the Victor test. And both Max and I went in to see Victor a number of times when he was in prison in New York. And I think he was effectively sussing us up and trying to ascertain what kind of film it was that he thought we were interested in making. And, you know, to then speak to his wife, his brother, his project manager, his bodyguard, for all these folks to agree to interview with us, they no doubt checked with Victor first.
How did you even know that there was this treasure trove of home movies that you had access to, you know, before you could approach the family? Did you know that that was there, that that was available?
We both met Alla at the trial. I had written a small kind of piece of journalism about her and her daughter. And during that, it came out that Victor was this avid home movie maker.
But the incredible thing is that this is a guy who, you know, is reputed to be so secretive and so mysterious, this kind of, you know, real-life Kaiser Sose character who lives in the shadows, and there's only one photograph, one known photograph of this guy. So, you know, the notion that there would be 200 hours of home movies, you know, from over the course of two decades is just completely counterintuitive. And so how did we reconcile the fact that he's this secretive, shadowy figure who's never photographed to the fact that he's, you know, videotaping saunas and swims in a lake and trips to an arms show in Bulgaria? How do you reconcile those two things? And that was the process for us of making the film and coming to realize that that there was this mythology that had grown up around Victor because it was simply, you know, a good story, because it was good business for a lot of journalists to sort of pile on and join that mythologizing party.
Most of that film wasn't shot by you guys, and there must have been so much of it. So how did you guys go through it all, and how did you decide what was good enough to be in the documentary?
Well, you know, a lot of times that's how you make a movie anyways. You film a lot of things, and then you have some time, and you look at the material, and the story kind of comes out. And here it was something very similar. In fact, you know, I think that kind of filmmaking, found footage filmmaking, is really becoming very significant and very central, because a lot of times when you make a film about a historical subject, there's a substantial video record of their life now, if people who lived in the last 50, 60 years. And I think that our new challenge is figuring out how to put that together into narratives.
But, you know, that said, how do you sort through 200 hours of home movies that don't necessarily have any plot, that don't necessarily, writ large, tell the story of this historical character? You know, I mean, the home movies are sort of the corollary to the newspaper headlines. And so finding that balance and figuring out how to tell the story of a man's life so it's not just sort of an episodic narrative, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, but rather to figure out, as good biographers, does he change over time? or is it the world that changes around him? And what are the consequences of this change? To try to figure out, because films can't go on for hours and hours and hours, there needs to be some process of summation. There needs to be some working of themes so that the audience feels that they're on a bit of a journey. So to cull from these whole movies the critical moments that seem to give insight into the essence of this man's character, into his weaknesses, into his loves, into his vulnerabilities, and into the world in which he's living.
And you just said that the film was a corollary to the story that the media was painting of Victor Boot. And I noticed there was a part at the beginning of the film, Matt Potter, who is a journalist, says, you know, that it's very difficult to talk about Victor Boot and not be seduced into one of two narratives. Either he's the merchant of death or he's a stooge and a victim. And I could tell watching the movie that you were very carefully trying to ride the line between those two narratives or create a third narrative that was much grayer. And there were times in the movie where there'd be hints that he knew he was doing things that were illegal. But then also there are times where he's extremely innocent seeming. What was your thought process? Am I right in picking up on these details that are kind of pulling me one way or the other in terms of how I should feel about him?
I think that it's exactly right. It's about letting those two narratives bump heads, and essentially the result, hopefully, is that you actually see what this world is actually like. Rather than having a caricatured, mythologized version of the arms trade, you get inside it and you understand all the complexities of it, the complicity of governments and other people involved in it, and also just the real life of it.
Now that it's complete, what do you think the response from Victor's family is going to be?
Obviously, Victor can't see the film, but he's had it described to him. Alla has seen the film, and I think that she, there are certain things that she doesn't like about it, or certain things that she would rather not have in it, such as the arms show, etc. But at the same time, she appreciates the fact that it's, that we tried to do something honest about him rather than kind of exploit the mythology. The most important thing is to make a movie about a movie about this essentially self-portrait of his own life that he was making.
Finally, who do you think should see this film, and what do you want the audience to take away from it?
Well, everyone?
Everyone should see it. For us, another thing that's important is it provides a window on the world of the arms industry, but a very human window. So it's not eat your vegetables viewing. It's a very human, engaging, and at times quite funny portrait. So, it's our hope that the film will foster dialogue. And already what we've experienced through the critical response, which has been tremendous, people see different films in it, that people have very different perception of who Victor is and of what happened to him. So in an interesting way, the film acts as a kind of mirror that's held up to the audience and their own preconceptions of what it means to transport arms, of what it means to be engaged in this industry. And that's very revealing.
That was Maxim Polstorovkin and Tony Gerber talking with KBIA's Katie Heiler about the film The Notorious Mr. Boot. I'm Christopher Husted. Check out the full conversations, photos, and videos from KBIA's True False Conversations series at kbia.org.